I saw Mission Impossible.
How was it? Was it good?
I went with my family and a group of people, which is the first time I've been to a movie as a group in a long time. And someone recommended it. My friend said, let's go see this movie. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go give it a shot because I have never seen a Mission Impossible movie, period.
Oh my God.
Nor have I ever seen, I haven't seen a Tom Cruise movie in the theater, I think, ever in my life, except for maybe Cocktail.
Was it a pulse pounding adrenaline ride?
You know what? It really was.
You know, he broke his ankle making that
movie. I heard about it. Yeah. And I heard that if you look at the way he jumps out of a window in one scene, you can kind of see that it happens. So, okay, here's what I want to say about this. Awesome, giant, big budget, amazing, such suspense, great plot twists. Alec Baldwin was funny in it. I love, like...
Okay, but can we talk about how in the preview, did you see the previews for it?
No.
In the preview, everyone else is talking normal volume. They're like, we've got a serious problem. There's a deadly thing that's going to happen. And then Alec Baldwin's like... We have to take over the world. He's like yelling for no reason.
I didn't know
reason.
He was going to be there. I was like, is that Alec Baldwin?
But regular voice, but yelling. Like, why so, Alec Baldwin?
Okay,
why?
Go ahead. I don't know. But I will say I really enjoyed it. And I thought Henry Cavill was good in it, too. And it's funny. To me, in a way, it's funny that there's a leading man working with Tom Cruise, the leading man, because he made room for Henry Cavill, who's quite dashing. I mean, I personally find him to be a little cheesy. And I don't totally swoon for Henry Cavill. But he has all the stats.
He's a little too living Ken doll for you.
Yeah, also I know some like smutty celebrity stuff, so I don't want to like, never mind.
Oh yeah, no, but he's scared to date women now
because
of
only
Me
that.
Too, which immediately raises red flags
yeah,
for
I just
me.
I'm like, you know what? You're kind of a cheese... I can't say that word, but that's what I think about
what?
Him.
What were you going
to
say?
He's a cheese dick.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know
you
if that's
said
allowed.
It. He's you broke the seal. Yeah.
Cheese dick.
Yeah.
You're a cheese dick. You're a cheese dick. Henry Cavill. And your mustache is a little cheesy, too.
Oh,
but
no.
I thought it was kind of nice that Tom Cruise, you said last week that you like Tom Cruise because he always has these strong leading character women there. Boy, that was a weird sentence. And Henry Cavill is like a strong leading man. Mm-hmm. And he didn't mind sharing, you know, he signed up for it, you know, because it's a strong leading man. And I thought that was good because he's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love the movie. I was super into it. I'm one of those clutchers. I was like clutching my husband's arm. I was like talking in his ear like, oh my gosh, what do you think? And it was awesome. My kids loved it. We're all kind of like clutching our faces in suspense. It was awesome. So I want to say I'm still not down with Scientology.
No, of course
I'm not down with the slave labor situation.
Totally. 100%.
I still think that, you know, not talking to his daughter, Suri, is not okay. But I did like the movie.
Yeah. Well, I'm really,
and that's
really
sort of a gift for you.
You know what? I really appreciate it. You gift wrap that. You wrap that up real nice
for
me, baby.
And you know
baby.
What? I have
Thank
another
you.
Little addition to what I just said, and then I'm going to hand over the mic to you. Because
no, keep going.
I think this is really relevant.
Yeah.
There are so many previews. If you've been to a movie lately, you know, wow, it's just front-loaded. Lots of previews. I was very happy to see that there were three movies in particular whose previews represented people of color. And women or young women leading actors in a role.
Nice.
And I was really happy to see that the lead character seemed to be, there's a black guy in a movie for a horror movie called like Overlord or something. There was a girl, a leading young woman for the movie Bumblebee, which is sort of about a transformer. And oh yes, there was another movie, which I can't remember the name of it, but it was amazing. And there was a young boy, a black young boy as the lead. And I thought it was just amazing. Oh, it's called Kin. And these movie previews came back to back. And I was so happy to see people of color and women leading a movie.
Yeah, I think it's past time that movie makers started to understand that more than one kind of 14-year-old gamer boy likes to go see action movies. Like,
yep.
I like action movies. Make me an action movie. And they kind of did with Atomic Blonde.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't seen that, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Anyway...
You know what you're listening to?
Mouthy.
Messy.
Mandatory.
I'm Roni.
I'm Katie. And today we have good content for you. Mm-hmm. She said, hoping that she would keep that promise.
I know you will.
Of course I will. Of course I will.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, the first thing that I wanted to talk about today is kind of just an observation I had. I went camping this weekend with another family. It was, you know, this couple and their kid and then our family, my husband and me and our two kids. So it was really interesting to watch, like, the division of labor in the campsite and how it fell in really predictable way. Like, there were no shockers there. There were no surprises there. But it was interesting to see, like, how The other mom in the family, she and I were the ones who like facilitated communication about the trip predominantly. Mm-hmm. She made the entire menu for the trip. She got there before we did, set up the whole camp kitchen, had all of the food like organized, pre-made breakfast burritos, pre-made pasta salad. I was like, what can I bring? She was like, bring PB&J stuff. I was like, this feels like a trap. I need to bring more than that. Like, this feels like a really uneven division of labor. And I was talking to my husband about it. I was like, I feel like we really just like coasted on this camping trip. And he was like, no, it's totally fine. Like they had all this stuff. And I don't think they like were mad about it or anything. But it was just interesting to see how I was very mindful of the division of labor being uneven between me and the other woman, because it felt like if she weren't there, that would have been my job. And because she was there, I didn't have to do that job. So then I was kind of like, okay, so what do I do now?
What did you do?
Well, I did a lot of the child minding, breaking with gender stereotypes there.
Right. Well, did the guys too?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Did they mind children?
They did, yes. Uh-huh. Because, yeah, both of the dads at the campsite were, like, super involved with the kids. They were doing, like, river floating and teaching the kids to fish. And, you know, because it was my two little boys and then their little girl. And so, you know, they were like, everyone's getting muddy. Everyone's catching frogs. You know, there were no, like, real solid lines there, but it was, you know, like she did the dishes every time because she actually really enjoys doing the dishes because I don't enjoy doing dishes
in a cold little drippy spigot.
This is what I'm saying. There was no spigot. She would like go get a bucket of river water and heat it over the campfire until it was boiling
and then make her own.
Yeah, like it's real. Like she is a pro.
Yeah.
She is a pro. She can do it. But no, like that was one of those times where I was like, maybe we should do the dishes this time. And my husband was like, sure, I don't think she minds. And I was like, but I mind.
You have to ask.
It's one of those things that's like, my work of being mindful of the division of labor was so much greater than like, oh, it's being done. Cool.
So, did you notice that the guys didn't seem to be bothered by it, but you were bothered by it?
I was insecure about it.
Sure.
I was like, am I pulling my weight right now? That was a constant
refrain. Do you think that the guys felt that way at all? I mean, I know you can't unequivocally say so, but what do you think?
I don't.
Because I think you're making a point, too, about that.
No, and I mean, again, like, they're super awesome dads, and, like, this is absolutely no shade on them, but they were like, hey, we're here at the river, let's go fishing, and, like, dads went fishing, and moms, like, stayed at the campsite with the kids, and, like, you know, at one point, I went on, like, a little hike up the hill and had a little bit of alone time, but, you know, like, the other mom, the only thing she like did, you know, technically for herself over the weekend was she bathed in the river.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. And like, we do not go camping with our families to escape from our families, right? So it's not like there's no right or wrong way to go camping.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I was really mindful of like, yeah, like I've taken a little bit of time for myself. She did all of this work getting us ready for this. And like, how can I come up to meet her level of like investment and work?
Did you find any way to do it?
I don't know. I don't think so. Because I had to leave early to prep for the show
too.
So you know what I'm going to do?
I want to hear it.
I'm going to bake her cookies. Yeah, I'm going to bake her cookies.
Send them.
I'm going to bake and send
Drop
cookies.
Them.
Yep. I'm going to take them bowling next weekend.
That's right.
Take them out for a nice steak dinner.
That's nice. Will
not
you do that?
Not call them the next day.
Because that's what I would do. No, I would definitely send cookies or send something yummy like a fruit bouquet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know
those
fruit bouquets?
Sherry's Berries?
Yes.
Sherry's Berries.
Do you hear that sound in the background?
I hear that sound in the background, and that's the sound of our producer, Tina, getting ready for our show, Smart Mouth,
which we're about
to tape. And you can watch it on YouTube TV on the TYT Network.
Today on Smart Mouth, we will be discussing B12 shots. Kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
We're going to be discussing...
We're going to be talking about detention centers.
It's going to be a big episode. We're talking about detention centers. We're talking about Larry Nassar, checking in on that fucking dirtbag, see what he's been up to.
Yeah, along with his sidekick, Brock Turner.
Oh, my God. The worst superheroes ever.
And then we're going to talk about the maternal death in especially black women. Like,
exactly. Maternal trauma, maternal death. Yeah, it's going to be fun, though.
And then we're going to do a new segment called That Didn't Age Well.
We're going to ruin all your childhood favorites.
Yeah, so tune in.
Tune in to Smart Mouth.
Every Thursday. today.
We've got your detention center news. We've got your updates on sexual abusers and predators. Yep. We've got your ruined childhood favorites. We've got all the goodies.
Yep. And there might be a couple of jokes in there.
If you're not sure how to find Smart Mouth on the Young Turks Network, come to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/mouthy, messy, mandatory. And we will have links up the wazoo for you.
Yep.
What is a wazoo? It's not.
It's that. No, it's the back one, I think.
My dad used to say up the flume, and I always thought it was like an up the chimney kind of thing. Like, oh, they're going up the flume. Like, you'll be sucked up the chimney.
And?
But I don't know what a flume is.
Does he?
I don't know.
Do you know sometimes you just say things and you're not really sure what they mean, and then you find out 3 decades later, wow, I've been wrong about that.
You can tell that I have 2 little boys because my next instinct was to say, maybe it's a butthole.
When in doubt, something internal and dark.
Yeah, it's probably a butthole.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you want to do? Do you want to do this tipping situation next, or do you want to?
You do the tipping thing because, you know, you know about that tipping thing. I mean, I've been a waitress and so have you.
I actually have never been a waitress.
I lied about you.
I've been a bartender.
I first waitressed. Okay, I never thought I was cool enough to bartend, so that should just tell you enough right now about Katie and Ronit, because I thought, oh, I don't think I've got what it takes to be an actress bartender. I have what it takes to be an actress waitress, maybe. But my first waitressing job was cocktail waitressing when I was about 14, believe it or not, because it was for an event space, and it was a very low-budget event space, and no one asked me my age officially, but I was serving alcohol.
Did you get tips?
No, but I did get a whopping $8 an hour, which was a lot at the time.
Say what? That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
off the books. Off the books.
Well, I will tell you, I did a short-term gig where I really relied on tips, and it was as a bartender with my friend, where it was totally off the books. I didn't make anything hourly. I did not fill out any tax paperwork on it, and all we did was we would split the tips at the end of the night. And it was, we always bartended on this like super busy night. We were a couple of college girls. This was in New Orleans. It was so much fun. Basically, my job as a bartender was to open bottles of Red Stripe because it was like it was a reggae night.
You weren't mixing Manhattans?
I was not. Actually, anytime anyone would be like, can I have a martini? I'd be like, yes. And then I'd go tap my friend on the shoulder and be like, I need you to make a martini.
That sounds like something I would do. If I knew I could do that, I would have been a bartender.
I know. Well, I was like, it was like rum and Coke. No problem. Rum for some amount. Like they didn't, you know.
Well, I remember
I just
people would go
really
to bartender
strong.
School. Do you know that in Manhattan? I was waitressing. People would go to bartender school to learn how to do it, and then they'd get a big fat job.
I did not. I just poured really strong drinks because I was like, no one's going to complain about this.
Yeah.
So anyway, the reason I'm bringing this up is I saw this article from Eater on Twitter, and I wanted to pull my face off, as in the Nicolas Cage movie, but not replace it with another face. Just walk around faceless and screaming.
Okay, what Nicolas Cage movie is that?
Face Off.
Oh. Didn't see it.
With John Travolta?
No.
Oh my God, it's Nicolas Cage and John Travolta both acting.
Stop.
It's so good. It's so good. Okay, National Treasure, Nicolas Cage is in it.
I know.
Okay, so this Eater article referenced a woman named Sam, who's a 29-year-old woman living in New York. She says, I spend a lot on food and alcohol and travel because I enjoy those things. I'll tip a little bit, but I don't feel like I need to tip a lot. Sam knows that she should tip. And shame around not tipping well is one of the reasons she is asked not to be identified by her full name here. Her standard tip is $5, whether the bill is $50 or $100. Is everybody else wanting to pull their skin off yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is up from $1 or $2, the amount she'd tip when she first started dining out as a college student in Indiana. There have been times when she hasn't left a tip at all, not because service was bad, but because she didn't feel like tipping that day. And yeah, so then she says, I'm going to fast forward because she's like, well, other people tip a lot, so why should I have to tip a lot? I'd rather spend that money on other things. And then she says, I'm not going to be rude and say I don't care, but I actually really don't care. That's not my concern. I don't know you. You chose that profession. All right, Sam.
One second. You said she has enough shame to know she shouldn't mention her second name or her full name, but she doesn't have enough shame to not say this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
And interesting.
I wouldn't call myself a socialist, okay? But Sam is what's breaking our capitalist society, okay? This is so whack.
Sam is breaking my balls. Sam. Let me just say right now.
I believe it's pronounced bulls.
Bulls. Yeah. Sam, you're breaking my bulls.
God, Sam.
Do you think a lot of people, I mean, there are some career servers.
So
some people have career waitress and waiter jobs, and they are amazing at them, and their jobs can sustain them because they've got some prime gigs, right?
Yep.
And that is a great lifestyle if it's something you like. like. A lot of people don't like serving. For instance, when I worked at Ivor's Acres of Clams, when I was like 18 years old here in Seattle, I would like, why are you laughing?
Because I said the whole name.
I always do that. I'll say Ross Dress for Less all the time.
Ivor's Acres of Clams?
Yes.
McDonald's, I'm loving it.
Ivor's. There's always there's Ivor's Salmon House, and I didn't work there. I worked at Ivor's Acres of Clams. And so whenever I would get sat with a new table, I'd be like, God damn it, I better want to serve them. But that's how I'd make my money. I always wanted to get sent home, but that's not how you make your money as a server.
Yep.
So you have to serve. Mm-hmm. But anyway, waitressing is not that easy. And the best day I ever had waitressing was the last day I had a job called Cafe Misto in LA.
What was Cafe Misto's
Italian
timeline?
Oh, it was, I don't know, I'm loving it too.
Cafe Misto, drink happy?
Yeah. No, it was an actual Italian delicious restaurant. And I got told by a table on my last day working there ever, I was pregnant with my daughter. They said, you are the best waitress. You are so good. And you know why? Because I was leaving that place and I never had to do it again.
You were happy as can be. You were skipping around the restaurant.
That's right. I was like, I love waiting on my last day. Okay, so go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, well, my whole thing about this Sam situation is that people are like, yeah, well, people are free to tip what they want in America. Like, you don't have to tip. But like, yeah, you kind of do have to tip. Because when you go to a restaurant where you're going to be receiving service, it's understood that what you're doing is you're entering into a financial arrangement for a good and a service, and then you will pay a fee for the good and the service. And the good is the food, and the service is the fucking service.
That's right, unless it's gratuity included, which in some restaurants it is.
Which people are like, man, gratuity included? Why can't I just leave the tip I want? Because of fucking Sam. That's why.
That's right.
You can't do it.
That's right.
And next time somebody's bitching about a $15 an hour minimum wage, don't bitch at me. Bitch at fucking Sam. Sam's the one who's fucking it up for everybody.
Yes, she is.
As I was reading it, I was like, this is the problem with the bootstrap myth, right? This idea that if you just work hard and you're a great person and you get a good job and you have the grit to stay with it and you're smart enough to avoid scams and you plan ahead and you're really disciplined with your money, you're gonna do well. And the fine print in there is like, if Sam fucking feels like it today, right? Like that power dynamic is not something that's ever examined in the bootstrap myth of like, if someone feels like it, because the server doesn't have the choice of saying, I'm not going to serve Sam because she's a shitty tipper. Like,
are there enough good tippers to make up for the shitty tippers in the world?
I don't know.
Does it kind of even out, or are people just not going to make what they need to make as a waiter or waitress?
I think it really depends on where you work. Yeah. But, hey, listen, if you're in the service industry listening to this, like, come tweet at us. We're at Mouthy Podcast. Yeah. We're on Facebook.com/Mouthy Messy Mandatory. How are you doing?
Yeah, how's the
tip landscape out there? Because this makes me so angry. This job
is the tip landscape these days, especially with people so worried about money and people having a hard time finding housing and all that? Yeah.
But I have found, in anti-racism groups that I'm in and stuff, when we do like fundraisers, that people who have the least to give the most. And give most often. And so I wonder, people who are like going to really shishi upscale restaurants, like, do they get shitty tips? Do they get stiffed on tips a lot versus
I think there are people who are cheap and people who are not cheap in all kinds of demographics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you, Sam.
Sam, next time just out yourself with your whole name.
Seriously.
Come on.
If you're ashamed, why are you talking to Eater?
Yeah.
What is she going to do with this article? Like, frame it in her bathroom? Like,
yeah, really.
What are you going to... You're ashamed of yourself. You don't want them to use your name. Why did you talk to a journalist about this?
You're a stink bomb.
She's so dumb. God. Sam. All right. Since we're down in the mud.
Let's talk about mortality.
Yeah. Mortality in general.
Well, yeah. I have mortality. Do you?
I don't know yet. I don't know.
Oh, well, okay.
TBD.
So, Serena.
I have not been hit by a car and lived to tell the tale.
That's true.
So,
you're right. Oh. Serena Williams had her baby, whose name is Olympia, right?
Olympia.
Mm-hmm. A beautiful little baby. And Serena was talking about how she was prone to blood clots, having blood clots. And after you have a baby, if you are prone to this kind of blood pressure situation, the clots, which are designed to help women after they have babies, to help with hemorrhaging, can become very dangerous if they get to the wrong organs. And so Serena had a very dangerous situation after she had her baby, and she asked the doctors for heparin, which is a blood thinning medicine, which is used at hospitals, but they didn't quite believe her, and she had to kind of really wrangle to get the medicine she needed because she was familiar with the feelings she had and the warning signs. They ended up giving it to her and she survived. And she said about this issue, because it's going to figure prominently in our conversation about women in hospitals and underprivileged neighborhoods and things like that. She said, Serena Williams said, I think that people don't want to listen to us, or people think women are so strong that they don't have to speak up about it. Or maybe it's that men have never been pregnant and they don't understand what the body goes through, even though they can be there for the 9 months and the time after. So, and that is a person with a position with a really big platform who most people know, who's achieved quite a big place in the tennis world. And she didn't get the medical care right off the bat that she felt that she needed. And you can imagine, if you are a woman of color and if you live in a neighborhood that is underfunded and the hospitals aren't that good, and if you have any kind of pre-existing conditions or you're at higher risk for certain conditions after you have a baby, what might happen to you if you can't advocate?
Oh my gosh, there's so much to unpack on this, because what you're saying about, you know, living in a place where the hospitals aren't necessarily staffed well, or there aren't a ton of resources, and then knowing or being susceptible to these pre-existing conditions. I read this fascinating article about the idea of weathering.
Mm-hmm.
And so this woman named Arlene Geronimus, great name,
I know,
by the
that's
way.
That's a really good name.
Arlene Geronimus. She works at the University of Michigan School of Public Health, and she's published a bunch of studies on this idea of weathering, and specifically weathering for people of color in America.
And weathering, meaning the way a building or a rock or a shoreline will weather, is what we're talking about inside
exactly.
of a body.
Like the chronic stress experience of just living as a person of color in the United States takes its toll on human bodies, to the extent that one study found that Black women in their 40s and 50s, their chromosomal markers of aging appeared 7.5 years older than white women of the same age. And so when you think about, with pregnancy, how much of a difference 7 years makes in right. the likelihood of complications of a pregnancy. Yeah. That's a huge difference. Getting pregnant at 30 versus 37 mm-hmm. or 33 versus 40. One of those is a geriatric pregnancy in giant quotation fingers.
Yep, yep, yep.
And so when they talk about, you know, oh, well, the norm of what we consider like high-risk pregnancies, or like a threshold of age for high-risk pregnancies, is set by standards made by white women.
Right.
And then if you think about the chronic stress that has been recorded in these studies, then you have to start treating these other pregnancies for people of color by being mindful of, like, there are going to be other conditions that are triggered by the stress of just their daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not happening. That's why Black women are 49% more likely than white women to deliver prematurely.
Mm-hmm.
And that is across all incomes and levels of education. So that is not about, like, a
access.
Poor person.
Yeah.
That is not about an uneducated person. That is straight up along racial lines.
Yeah.
Which is real. It's a really scary thing to think about. I mean, I remember being in the hospital with my 6-year-old, whom I call Chicken on the blog. And I had been planning a home birth and pulled the ripcord on that as soon as the contractions got serious. I said, our password, which was Mount Everest. Mount Everest means get me the fuck to the drugs right now. And so we went, and they gave me a shitload of drugs, so much that I couldn't really push effectively. And so after 2 hours of pushing, they were like, okay, this is your last chance. In 2 minutes, we have to go do a cesarean, because he's been in there for too long. He's been in the birth canal for too long. And that was really, really scary. And luckily, we were able to deliver. They put the little suction cup on his head, and they assisted to help pull him out. And it was great, and it was fine. And then at 24 hours old, he popped a fever. They thought, oh my gosh, he has an infection. They're rushing him to have a chest x-ray. They're putting IV tubes in his hand. They're talking about, like, oh, you need to get a breast pump, because he's going to be in the NICU soon. He's going to be too sick to nurse. You guys need to start making plans in terms of support, like who can handle your stuff at home, because you're going to be tagging in and out here for as long as possible. We're going to transfer him to like a level one facility. It was so hectic so quickly and terrifying so quickly that after we got home, and of course, you know, a week later, a $30,000 hospital bill later, of which we had to pay, you know, $500, thank God, for insurance.
Yeah,
we had a perfectly healthy baby who was probably overbundled when they took his temperature that one time, you know, like,
yeah,
who knows, but they took it really, really seriously. They took me really, really seriously. And it was still very scary. They treated us like our lives were super, super important and were being threatened. And that was terrifying. But how much more terrifying must it be to be like, I think something might be wrong and nobody will listen to you. And then you have this thing hanging over your head of like, what if something goes wrong and I didn't yell loudly enough
right.
to be taken seriously,
right.
to have my child treated or have myself treated.
Because it takes a certain amount of confidence that your viewpoint will be considered strongly and taken seriously to come and advocate for yourself. If one doesn't feel that someone's going to listen or that their viewpoint is valid or that they actually know what they're talking about, one might not insist. And so if you're disenfranchised or feel that someone knows better than you and that maybe that you're not going to get the attention you need, you may not get the medical care you need. And that is really clear from the Serena Williams example.
Oh, yeah.
Because she had to mention it twice for anyone to even take care of her. And she's Serena Williams.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And, you know, these studies show that per 100,000 births in the U.S., 44 black women will die per 100,000 black women who give birth. Mm-hmm. 13 white women will die right. per 100,000 women. Who
so
give
how much
birth.
Of that is about where the hospitals are and what the staff is like? I think that there's a little bit of the neighborhoods in which the hospitals exist yeah. have to impact that a little yeah. bit.
You know, for a pro-life country, this feels like a big old well, steaming
I can't
pile
believe
of bullshit
it. In that
me.
Same yeah. article, I think there was a ProPublica article as well that I read when we were preparing for this. But I think there's something like 700 to 900 women in general die from childbirth in this country yeah. or they died last year.
Well, and I mean, not even going like as far as death, I read that 9% mm-hmm. of women who deliver have PTSD
wow.
for some kind of trauma during the birth. That's 4 million babies are born every year. So you're looking at about 350,000 women suffering from PTSD with a newborn at home.
Right.
Oh, and
yeah,
oh
we're not even
God.
Talking about postpartum depression.
That
which,
sounds awful.
Yeah, it sounds very bad.
Yeah, so there's some shit's broken. What do we need? What do we need?
Well, we need better oversight.
We need more people of color in medicine.
Right.
Right?
Right.
We need to be actively addressing bias in medical practitioners.
Maybe people need to be recruited to hospitals that have really high mortality rates to supervise and see what's happening.
Yeah.
And to kind of fix all these little areas where people fall through the cracks and where best practices aren't enforced.
Yeah. The frustrating thing about this is it feels like what do we do short term? You know, like it feels like all of these are systemic.
Well, it's interesting,
to-dos,
you know, this is just a small section of this, but in that ProPublica story, which I'm going to be talking about on Smart Mouth as well, this one story struck me because I always think it's really important to listen to one individual story or a couple of very personal stories to understand a bigger picture. And in this one case, a woman who ended up dying after delivering her twin boys, her sister told her, please don't go to that hospital. Please don't go to that hospital. It's not a good hospital mm-hmm. in your neighborhood. They have a really bad, you know, bad reputation. But this woman had delivered her other babies there and felt okay about it. And so she went. And her mm-hmm. symptoms and her blood clots were not treated the way they should. And she ended up dying. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, her children are being raised by a sister and the older children. And it was really tragic because there was a reputation that preceded this hospital as not being very good for care. And it ended up being true.
Yeah. I mean, obstetrics is one of those medical fields where growth is notoriously slow because, like, who's going to do experiments on pregnant women, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, nobody wants to do.
Yeah.
Like, the research is very slow and has to be very tentative and very cautious. But, like, these deaths are preventable. That's, you know, these are not, like, paging Dr. House. It's a medical fucking mystery. Like, right. she had blood clots. This happens all the fucking time. Her blood pressure was high. Where was her blood pressure medication?
Mm-hmm.
The uterus, like, didn't fully expel the placenta, she's hemorrhaging. Like, these are all, like, I know them.
Right.
You know how many days of med school I've done?
None.
Zero. I have Red Cross CPR certification, and I know this shit.
Right.
Okay? Like, why? These mm-hmm. deaths are preventable. That's what makes it really, like, makes
right.
me angry.
Right. And do you think, so,
for
along with the, yeah, right? Along with the demographics about where these yeah. hospitals might be, is there also sort of a bias against patients who are black women? Do you know, did you find any research on that?
Oh my gosh. Well, no, I don't have numbers on it, but mm-hmm. I mean, anecdotally, I know that people disbelieve black people who say they're in pain. Mm-hmm. Black people have to insist on pain medications way more than white people do. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of different theories as to why. One is that people assume that black people are drug seeking. Mm-hmm. Another is
wow.
that, yeah.
That's
yeah. Woohoo, America. And another is that there is this kind of unconscious bias that we have toward Black people being stronger than white people.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't assume that their pain needs to be addressed when they say they're in pain. We're like, no, you're fine. You're strong. You've got
this. Well, so that
hurts people.
Hashtag screwed. Like, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah.
We're going to be going into more detail on our show. So if you want to get more of this conversation, you can listen and watch Smart Mouth. And we will be posting some links and some studies up on our Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory Facebook page as well.
Yahtzee.
Yeah. On that note,
I was trying to bring it back at the end there. Did it work?
Let's say Yahtzee together then.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Yahtzee.
Flapjacks. What else is fun?
That's our show.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap, y'all.
Maybe it's a butthole.